Hi, this is Bev.
And this is Diz.
And this is
Trigger Warning.
Okay, so today's story is a disaster story. And as usual, I'm going to start with the trigger warnings. There is a brief mention of terrorism in this one and deaths of first responders. So I just wanted to put that out there so that you guys can be prepared. And I guess other than that, we'll get going here.
Sounds good.
So we are talking about the explosion in Texas in 2013. It's Central Texas, McLennan County, and the town there is called West. It's 20 miles north of Waco and about 70 miles south of Dallas. The town was incorporated in 1892 after the Missouri-Kansas-Texas Railroad was laid and passed through the area. It was known as Bold Springs at that time. And the postmaster of Bold Springs was Thomas West. He was a farmer. So when the land was split by the railroad and businesses started springing up, they put a post office there.
Mm-hmm.
Like basically a post station. So it was, the town was kind of referred to as West's Station, like belonging to West.
Oh.
Since he was the postmaster, it transitioned to West Station and then eventually just to West.
Wow.
So thus town, Central Texas, called West Texas. So I just want to put that out there because you hear West Texas and you're thinking, oh, she's just talking about generally out in Texas somewhere in the West. So West was a small town like so many others in Texas and all across the U.S. Back in the 1890s, there were a couple waves of Czech immigrants that moved, like settled in Texas.
Interesting.
And they actually came to be known as Czech Texans. That's how many there were. They actually had their own like little subgroup or whatever.
That's cool.
And West had a decent sized group of them. So I'm going to go ahead and warn you right now. Some of the last names I'm going to have a little bit of an issue with.
Okay.
I'll do my best out of respect for these people, but just a warning. Some of them are, Czech names, something like that. So,
okay.
The town was quiet, close-knit. The population in 2013 was around 2,600.
Oh, wow. That is a small town.
Yeah, tiny. The West Fertilizer Plant was built in 1961 and opened in 1962, and originally was further away from the town.
Mm-hmm.
In 1972, so 10 years after it opened, the nearest structures were one house that was 265 feet from the property and a baseball field that was like 58 feet away.
Oh my gosh.
A nursing home and a group of houses were about 500 feet away. So town grew, got bigger, bigger population. So by 2013, there were several buildings close by. The whole mm-hmm. town had just grown further and closer to the plant.
Wow, which is good, but...
Yeah. So there was a apartment complex with 22 apartments that was 370 feet from the plant. The playground and basketball court that was in front of the apartment building was about 250 feet.
Oh, wow.
The West Rest Haven Nursing Home. West Rest is really hard to say fast.
Okay.
West Rest Haven Nursing Home that was built in 1967 was about 600 feet from the plant. West Intermediate School, which was built in 1985, was 552 feet southwest of the plant. And the high school, built in 2000, was a little over 1,200 feet.
Oh my gosh, that's a ton of things right around there.
And a lot of schools. West Middle School was built in 1923, so before the plant existed, and served as a high school at first. It, after the plant was built and everything, it was about 2,000 feet from the plant. The elementary school, which was built in the 60s, was about 4,800 feet from the plant.
Oh my gosh.
So, West...
Well, it really grew and grew.
Yeah, yeah. And there were tons of houses, too, all around this. Because you think about school zones, it's usually residential right around the schools.
Right, yeah.
And that's the way it was. It's like this was, you know, for lack of a better term, downtown west. Like, there were a lot of farms and stuff that spread out around it, but these clusters of homes were right there where all the schools were, right. City Hall, you know, like that kind of stuff.
Okay.
So, West Fertilizer Company was eventually shared by two companies. It was West Fertilizer Company and Adair Grain, Adair, A-D-A-I-R. In 2004, West Fertilizer Company was having financial issues, and a local farmer named Donald Adair bought it and kept the name. 9 people worked at the plant, which kind of surprised me. I figured it would be more, but...
Seems really small.
Adair Grain sold grain, obviously, in the shop, and stored grain in 4 silos at the plant. And then West Fertilizer Company sold farming chemicals like pesticides, fertilizers, and then basic farming equipment like twine and barbed wire and stuff like that in the shop.
Okay.
So there were multiple buildings on the property. One was the shop and stuff. One was like the storage area where the fertilizers were stored and seeds, old like off-season seeds and stuff. Then there were the silos and then probably like a couple little maintenance sheds or something like that.
Okay.
So they also had bulk storage of chemicals and the fertilizers. They were stored in huge tanks for the chemicals and then wooden bins for the fertilizer.
Okay.
The company sat next to the railroad tracks because that's how the town had grown. So, you know, convenience. So they got shipments by train and by truck. One of the fertilizers stored on the property was fertilizer grade ammonium nitrate.
That sounds scary.
And it's abbreviated FGAN or FGAN for short. Ammonium nitrate can explode when under extreme pressure and heat. It was actually the one used in the bombing of the Alfred P. Murrah Federal Building in Oklahoma City. And that was on April 19th, 1995. On April 17th, 2013, so really just shy of the anniversary of Oklahoma City bombing, around 7:29 p.m., a call came in to 911 reporting a fire at the plant. A police officer named Michael Irving, who'd been patrolling near the plant, smelled smoke and wasn't sure where it was coming from, but a resident flagged him down and told him it was coming from the plant. So Officer Irving radioed dispatch to report the smoke and headed toward the scene. According to the report issued by the CDC, the fire department was dispatched at 7:34 p.m. At 7:35 p.m., Officer Irving radioed dispatch about getting the contact information for the owners of the plant, and he also confirmed visible flames in the northeast corner of the fertilizer storage building. So, you know, usually where there's smoke, there's fire, but until you actually confirm that there's a fire, for them it's just smoke. It could be something smoking, you know. So, the WVFD, the West Volunteer Fire Department, completely volunteer since it was founded in 1894, on their way to the fire, 2 engines. Officer Irving is instructed to arrange roadblocks at multiple points around the facility to keep civilians away. At 7:39 p.m., Engine 1 arrives on scene and confirms the fire, so that's 10 minutes after the first call. There were actually several calls, but they started around 7:29. Several 911 calls, because obviously this was a huge facility, and people noticed the smoke.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, like gray smoke. So 7:39 p.m., the first engine gets there, confirms the fire. The brush truck with one firefighter on board and the tanker truck driven by the fire chief are, you know, en route at that time. So between the initial 911 calls at 7:29 p.m., and 7:50 p.m., multiple firefighters, some driving their own personal vehicles, all volunteers, arrive at the scene to help out.
Oh my gosh.
So there are a lot of people from the town watching the fire from different points around the facility, different points around the town. Some are in their vehicles, like parked on side roads, and a few of them are recording on their cell phones. So you can see footage of this. At approximately 7:50, I saw 7:50 and 7:51, there was a massive explosion. About 30 tons of the ammonium nitrate blew.
What?
And I read somewhere that this was 5 times the strength of the blast from Oklahoma City.
I am so, just speechless right now.
And I'm going to do Oklahoma City one day because it's one of the first things I remember, an act of terrorism that I remember.
As a kid, yeah.
The blast was equivalent to somewhere between 7.5 and 10 tons of TNT.
Oh my gosh.
It caused an 89-foot crater at the site of the explosion, 89 feet wide. The U.S. Geological Survey, USGS, registered the explosion at a 2.1 on the Richter scale.
What?
Yeah. And 2.1 doesn't sound like a lot, but that's something.
Especially from an explosion.
Yeah. 9 seismic stations in Texas, ranging from 25 miles to 360 miles away, registered something. So even seismic readings at 360 miles away registered the explosion. There was enough vibration from the sound wave.
My brain can't even compute that. I can't comprehend that.
Yeah. So 360 miles away, there's at least a blip of something. That's how powerful this was. A mile from the blast at St. Mary's Catholic, the stained glass cracked and splintered. In Abbott, Texas, which was 6 miles away, doors popped open. I guess the difference of pressure.
Percussion or whatever.
Yeah. A fisherman on Aquila Lake, which was 10 miles away, ducked because he thought he was about to be struck by lightning because of the flash. And
I didn't even think about the flash.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just thinking about the noise and, like, the wave of...
Yeah. And then this one was just like, holy crap. 29 miles away, a former soldier told a friend that was an explosion. 30 miles away, a dude heard it and was like, that was an explosion. And it was a former soldier, so I'm sure it was, it was probably like, oh my God, what's going on?
My mouth is just hanging up. That
complete silence by my co-host.
Yes, hello, I am still here.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. It was just like, it's something that your brain can't wrap around. That's why I was putting all those facts in there, because I was like, it was extreme.
Yeah.
Like, extreme.
And even now, I can't really comprehend that.
So, here's some more of the damages and stuff.
Give it to me.
So, the blast shifted a section of the railroad tracks 2 feet and overturned a parked railway car that was filled with ammonium nitrate also.
Shut your mouth!
And I read somewhere, 100,000 pounds or 200,000 pounds in 2 different sources is how much was in that railway car. So it was full. And it toppled it over. Like, it filled turned it over.
Oh my gosh.
And shifted the railroad tracks themselves. The West Rest Haven Nursing Home, was damaged beyond repair. An 800-pound slab of the plant's foundation crashed through the roof. Before the explosion, while the fire was still going, an order had been given to move the residents to the front of the building, because the back of the building was the one that faced the plant, but it came too late. The residents were actually evacuated through windows instead of hallways because they were afraid the structure would collapse.
Oh my gosh.
They were moved to the football field, and then because of fears of another explosion, because of the other stuff on site, they moved them to the community center, which was further away. 72 of the residents were injured enough to be taken to hospitals. And just as a side note, about 3 months after the disaster, the nursing home was completely torn down, demolished, because there was no rebuilding it from what it was. They did end up rebuilding another one on a different site later, but
they couldn't do anything with what was left.
Yeah, it was structurally unsound and destroyed, basically.
Oh my gosh.
The blast tore apart the playground and the basketball court. And it's terrifying to see the pictures. You can see these pictures.
Oh, I'm going to have to.
Yeah, the CSB report I'll mention later on has pictures of all kinds of stuff, and it's chilling to see, like, the pole that holds the basketball thing just curved like a candy cane or something.
Oh my gosh.
And like the playground equipment is just obliterated. The apartment complex just beyond the playground was also completely destroyed. The walls close to the blast collapsed like immediately, and then like was followed pretty much right after by the other walls.
Uh-huh.
So both the sections of wall and the roof gone. So the whole thing collapsed.
I keep saying the same thing, but it's still blowing my mind.
It's crazy.
All right, I'm looking up images right now. Uh-huh. Oh my gosh.
Which ones are you looking at?
Just everything.
Yeah.
Just whatever popped up first. Destruction.
Yeah.
That looks like a nuclear bomb cloud.
Yeah. Major damage was done to West Intermediate School and West High School, which were the two closest to the facility.
Oh my gosh.
And some of the people that were recording were at West High School, and it was damaged pretty badly. 350 homes, and there were only about 700 homes in town, so half of the homes in town were damaged in some way, and 142 of them were damaged beyond repair.
Hmm.
Homes caught fire because of gas line ruptures and debris. I mean, debris was raining down on fire, so numerous trees, manholes, water lines, and other infrastructure were damaged or destroyed. Over 260 people were injured. One nursing home resident died of a heart attack during the evacuation.
Oh my gosh, that is so sad. Yeah.
And so it is, he is listed as one of the 15 because it was directly related
as
to.
Yeah.
Because everything was, like, it was, looked like chaos out, like it was just
the end of the world is probably what it felt like
and
looked like.
People screaming and like it looked like a war zone. The apartment complex, two people died there. And then 12 firefighters and first responders died. Total of 15 people and almost 300 injured. 15 deaths, 300 injured. The response was immediate and explosive and massive to the explosion. Firefighters from surrounding towns arrived to put out house and gas fires because now their car's on fire, their house's on fire, you know.
And their fire department was all at the plant.
Yeah, a lot of them were. The injured were triaged to the football field and then, like I said, moved later to the community center. Four hospitals and surrounding communities took the injured people. The injuries varied from abrasions, contusions, lacerations, to bone fractures, eye and ear injuries, and concussions. This is a lot of names coming up of different entities, but it was just amazing the response. Texas Task Force 1 and 2 urban search and rescue teams arrived to help search for injured and missing people.
That sounds legit.
Texas A&M Forest Service sent an incident management team. Texas A&M Veterinary Medicine and Biomedical Sciences sent an emergency veterinary team.
Oh my gosh.
Because you don't think about it, but people's animals are injured too.
Yes. Oh.
The site was declared a disaster by the governor of Texas, and FEMA was sent to assist as well. The National Guard sent the 6th Civil Support Team to check air quality and determine if there were any chemical or biological hazards for the survivors.
I didn't even think about that either.
Yeah, because there were chemicals there.
Chemicals are exploding.
Mm-hmm. The Waco City Police, the Department of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, also known as ATF, the U.S. Chemical and Hazard Safety Investigation Board, also known as CSB, all converged on the scene to investigate. In May, so a couple weeks later, the Texas Rangers also were deployed by the Texas Department of Public Safety to assist in the investigation. So, it was pretty clear that the explosion obviously was caused by the ammonium nitrate, triggered by the fire.
Right.
But no one knew what caused the fire.
Right. Oh, yeah, that's right.
So, they could see the color change in the smoke and stuff like that. And they knew kind of where the fire was, but they didn't know what caused the fire. They did hundreds of interviews over the years. They sifted through tons of debris, including the grain that spilled out of those silos. And they still don't know.
They still don't know what caused it?
They still don't know what caused the fire.
Do they have an idea? Or are you going to get to that?
Sorry. On May 11th, 2016, so it was 3 years later, the ATF actually made an announcement that the fire was set deliberately. But a lot of people doubt that, but they believe that the ATF basically assumed that because they couldn't find any other reason.
Gotcha.
For it.
Okay.
So it could have been that it was an electrical fire or something, somebody threw out a cigarette when they were leaving, or, you know, like it could have been something like that, but it was just destroyed by the blast. Well, and so they couldn't figure out what caused it.
Because looking at this one picture, like there's literally, you can't tell if there was a building there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's not like there's a lot to look at. It is just a
scar on the earth now. Yeah.
To know like, oh, it looks like, you know, even if you could find, you wouldn't even be able to tell what was the ignition source.
Yeah. Because, I mean, a fire, they can track fire.
Right.
But when that explosion happens and that pressure wave and things literally are blown apart, debris from the building was thrown 2.5 miles from the place.
Whoa.
So obviously it was a big area to look at.
Oh my gosh, that is a huge area.
Yeah. And then the facility itself was already fairly large with multiple buildings. They knew, like I said, which building it happened in because they know where the ammonium nitrate was stored, but they still don't know for sure what happened with the fire.
Well, and even just having to go through that grain.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like needle in a haystack, essentially.
Yeah, for real. Yeah.
And you don't even know what that needle is going to look like.
Exactly. They don't even know what needle they're looking
for. If there's a needle there.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Oh my gosh, this hurts my head.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Now, the facility did have a history of intruders and robberies.
What the heck?
Police responded to at least 11 reports of burglaries and 5 separate ammonia leaks at the plant.
Oh.
Some of the leaks were associated with theft and interference with the valves on the tanks. This was because the tanks stored liquid anhydrous ammonia, which is used to make methamphetamine.
I was like, it's got to be drug related.
Yes. At one point, one of the plant managers had said that they were stealing between 3 and 5 gallons per night of this,
surprised they didn't have a meth explosion
other
nearby.
Farmers that had their own supply for the ammonia for farming had people steal it from their tanks sometimes.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
And then ammonium nitrate, of course, can be used for terrorism to make bombs.
Right.
But there are no reports that any of that was ever taken.
Okay.
So apparently it wasn't people trying to cause terrorism, it was people trying to make drugs.
Right.
But there was no security system at the place.
Never.
And no security guards, despite those 2 chemicals and stuff being there.
Well, I wonder how much that really cost the company.
Yeah.
3 to 5 gallons a night. Like, you know, I don't know if that would be, if it's worth that.
Right. Right. So, McLennan County Chief Deputy Sheriff Matt Cawthorn was quoted saying, "It was a hometown-like situation. Everybody trusts everybody." During the investigation, they did discover that West Fertilizer Company had not disclosed the amount of ammonium nitrate being stored there to the Department of Homeland Security.
Some misdeeds happening, huh?
Yeah. They had reported to state and local agencies.
Okay.
But any company, from what I understand, it said any company that stores more than 2,000 pounds, so around a ton, of ammonium nitrate, or 400 pounds when combined with combustible material, are required to report the quantities to the Department of Homeland Security.
Because so they had both of those things then.
Yes. So they, I mean, those quantities are large enough for terrorism. That's why the Department of Homeland Security needs
to
know.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay.
Exactly. So, over 1 ton, basically. It's believed that about 30 tons of ammonium nitrate is what caused the blast. They estimated in that bin, it was between 40 and 70 tons And the rail car that had blown over contained, if it was 100,000 pounds, that's about 50 tons.
Oh.
So they had...
They're lucky that something didn't happen with that rail car to make it another explosion.
Exactly. And they're lucky that the tanks of the ammonia didn't rupture, because that could have caused gas to leak out and poison people.
Gosh, that rail car was so close.
Yeah.
I'm looking at this picture again.
Mm-hmm. So after the multiple break-ins and thefts in late 2008, early 2009, the plant manager was told to install a surveillance system. One source I saw said that they did comply with that suggestion, but I'm guessing if they did, the system, including the storage of any recordings, was destroyed in the blast.
Okay, I'm like, that makes sense.
Because I thought, oh, well, if they had a security system, can we not look at the... But the footage was probably stored there.
Right, because why wouldn't it be?
You know, in the shop or the office or something.
Yeah.
It would have been where it was, I'm sure. And they, you know, it was destroyed.
There was nothing.
It was obliterated. So,
oh.
Yeah.
Now we'd have it on the cloud.
Yeah, exactly.
And it would be okay.
Exactly. So, the last break-in was recorded in 2011.
All right.
911 dispatch received a call about a leak that was, quote, so strong it can burn your eyes. So, one of the firefighters, and that had also worked at the plant at one point, Cody Dragoo, was sent to the plant usually after burglaries to look for tampering and stuff like that. So, this incident in 2011, he went and looked at it and confirmed that somebody had been tampering with a valve. So, it was probably somebody trying to steal the anhydrous ammonia.
Mm.
Cody was one of the people that was killed in the explosion.
I'm looking at a picture of him right now.
The nursing home that was destroyed, West Rest Haven, sued CF Industries, El Dorado Chemical Company, and International Chemical Company, but the amount awarded was not disclosed. Families of the victims who died and others who were injured had launched multiple lawsuits as well. A lot of them had settled, but most of the settlements were private.
Right.
They haven't released any of that kind of stuff.
Wow.
The city of West itself was awarded $10.44 million in their lawsuit. And that was the only one where the settlement was made public.
It was public, yeah.
Because it was, I guess, the stipulation of the lawsuit, because it was a governmental entity, like the local government itself.
A locality.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Exactly. So the CSB report was 267 pages. I mean, it was in depth.
As it should be.
And the main thing that they got out of this was that regulations needed to be set up to keep the public away from fertilizer plants, anything storing chemicals or anything explosive. Because over the years, like I said, the town just grew closer and closer. You know, so it's surrounded by schools and the nursing home and an apartment complex and a playground, you know?
Like, so was it that there no actual, like, nationwide regulations, or was it just that they didn't have regulations at that particular plant? Or do you know?
It was everywhere.
Okay.
Yeah.
So this is one of those things which causes the regulations to be...
Yes, exactly. Okay. Exactly. So I didn't see where any laws were enacted, but I think that, like, local communities and stuff probably set up regulations, and companies that had, like, had new plants and stuff. That maybe the locality was like, oh, after that, okay, we're going to set up regulations to where nobody can build closer than this.
OSHA might be able to do something, too.
Yeah.
I mean, that's usually for the employees. No, that's for everyone, though, I guess.
Yeah. So the CSB talked about how, you know, this happened at 8 o'clock at night.
Mm-hmm.
So the 9 employees were not there. There were no children in the school.
Oh, my gosh.
And the residents of the nursing home had not gone to bed yet. And the rooms for the nursing home mostly were on the side of the plant, like toward the plant.
Oh, wow.
So the fact that they were kind of
on the opposite side.
And they had started moving them because of the fire anyway, because they actually had an emergency plan set up.
Smart. Have an emergency plan, guys.
Yes, emergency plan. If the time of the explosion had been different earlier or later in the day, the death toll would have been so much higher.
Yeah.
The kids and those schools I mean, glass shattering, roofs coming down, walls falling. It was a war zone, and they showed pictures.
People driving?
Yeah.
If it was a few hours earlier?
Yeah. The children, like, I'm surprised. I guess it was just late enough that the kids were inside.
Right.
If it had been at 7 o'clock, they could have been outside playing on the playground.
That's true.
You know? This was in April, so it wouldn't have been dark out.
Right.
Probably not until around this time.
Not super cold. They're going to want to stay outside as long as possible.
Yes, Texas. It's not cold.
Yeah.
So.
Do they get cold? Yeah, they get cold, but still.
But, yeah, so they were like, basically, the time of day that it happened is, like, the miracle. Because if it had happened earlier in that day or later in the day, it was a Wednesday, so schools would have been in. The nursing home people could have been in bed and in separate rooms, but more of them were out in common areas. You know, like, it was just, it was amazing. So, a lot of the people from West leaned on their faith after the devastation.
Mm-hmm.
There are several stories of near misses and little small blessings and stuff that just brought their community closer to God. It was a very, because there were so many Czech Texans there, a lot of them, it looks like a lot of them were Catholic, but then there were other denominations as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, they were all very religious, and you know, they looked at like these little things that happened as miracles.
Mm-hmm.
One lady, Jeanette Holosek, was shielded by the steel of the 66 Chevy Impala her son had stowed in her garage. And the way that the little story I was reading when it said that, it was like, if he hadn't stored that damn Chevy in the garage. So I think it was something where she was like, I want my garage back. But it shielded her from the blast. Her home basically shattered because of the concussion from the blast.
Oh, my God.
Her bedroom wall was cleared of all its decor except a single wooden cross. In another room, she had two paintings hung on the wall. One was store-bought, generic, whatever. The other one was one painted by a cousin of hers. The store-bought painting was shredded. The one created by the cousin, the one that couldn't be replaced, wasn't even lopsided on the wall. It was still hanging perfectly. Oh, and the front of a forklift landed in their yard. So. Yeah. Misty Kaska was in Waco at the time because she happened to have found a coupon for Panda Express.
Yay, Panda Express.
So
coupon.
She and her husband weren't even home.
Saving them.
And their house collapsed and caught fire.
Oh, my gosh.
They rushed back when they found out about the blast because she's a nurse. And so she knew she was needed. And so she immediately went to where they were triaging and started helping the injured.
God bless her.
You know, obviously the blast is the main story here.
Right.
Everybody, you know, looks at the video, looks at the pictures, and it's astounding.
Yeah.
It's crazy that, you know, people, you know, 1,000 feet away, they're trucks flipped over, like, it damaged some of these huge, like, tanker trucks and stuff for the fire department. It destroyed one of their huge fire trucks.
Oh, wow.
A video I watched on YouTube, one of the firefighters that was there lived because he happened to be standing behind one of the fire trucks. So it blocked him enough from the blast.
So he was one of the few that responded that actually lived.
Yeah. And it was multiple fire departments. Because it's basically like West is there, and then there's little towns, you know.
Like around,
6 miles, 10 miles, whatever. So, a lot of this, I'm actually reading through these and looking at this stuff and thinking about all these firefighters and first responders. I want to dedicate a little bit of time to them.
Absolutely.
Because the blast is crazy, and it's beyond belief, and it's mind-blowing, and, you know, trying to figure out how the fire started is frustrating and confusing and still being looked into, mm-hmm. you know, 11 years later. But that is for, you know, that's for the federal authorities and stuff to look at. We've got the pictures and stuff of the facility.
Mm-hmm.
We've got the story, and oh my gosh, and the wow. But these were real people.
Absolutely, yeah.
So, I pulled up some stuff on each victim. And I just want to tell you a little bit about them. They were people. They had family. They had friends. They had people who loved them. And I just want to dedicate a little bit of time to them. So
that would be great.
Jimmy Mattus, M-A-T-U-S, was 52 when he died. He was a member of West Volunteer Fire Department, but he'd worked 40 years at Westex Welding and Fire Apparatus, which was a company that builds fire trucks. A post on his obituary said, quote, Jimmy has been a friend, father, husband, and hero to all of us, but now he is one of God's angels. I will always remember his smile, his patience, and above all, his gift of himself to others. Rest in peace, Jimmy. You will never be forgotten. Morris Bridges was 41. He was also a member of West Volunteer Fire Department. He met his wife Carmen actually when they were in middle school together.
Aww.
Then they went their separate ways, whatever. They reconnected while they were planning their 20th high school reunion. And they'd only been married 4 years when he died.
Oh my goodness.
His last words as he left to go fight the fire that day were, I love you, to his infant son, and be right back. He was an avid motorcyclist and enjoyed fishing and camping. A post on legacy.com said, quote, farewell, my sweet friend. So glad God put me in your path, and I'm proud to say I knew you. I will always smile when I hear or think of you. Cody Dragoo, the one that I mentioned earlier,
mm-hmm.
That usually went and investigated the burglaries.
Yes.
He was 50. He was a member of West Volunteer Fire Department. He enjoyed cooking and watching NASCAR. Cody was involved with the annual Volunteer Fire Department barbecue cook-off fundraiser and organized tractor pulls in town.
Oh.
A post on his obituary tribute states, in part, when somebody dies suddenly, it leaves a large gap in those left behind because they never got the chance to say goodbye. In our grief, we bid a sad farewell until we meet again on the other side. He was a true hero and will be greatly missed.
Oh, it's so sad.
Mm-hmm. Okay, this last name I'm going to have trouble with. Joey Pustajovsky?
Pustajovsky. That looks right.
29.
Oh my gosh.
He was a member of the West Volunteer Fire Department and was secretary for the town of West. Joey was a devout Catholic who enjoyed golfing, hunting, and working in his yard. He was an avid A&M fan. And a tribute on his obituary said, in part, I can remember growing up around him, riding four-wheelers and dirt bikes, working on the farm with him, and spending time around his family. He was a man of character and a hero. He will be missed.
Hmm.
Douglas Snokhouse, it's S-N-O-K-H-O-U-S,
mm-hmm.
was 50. He was a member of West Volunteer Fire Department for 15 years.
Mm.
He had worked almost 32 years at Central Texas Iron Works. So a lot of these people, like, they had full-time jobs and then they volunteered too. He enjoyed golfing, fishing, talking with friends, and cooking barbecue. And he loved spending time with family. Robert Snokehouse, 48, was his little brother, Doug's little brother, and also a firefighter with West Volunteer Fire Department. He also worked for Central Texas Iron Works, where his brother worked, and he was part of the emergency response team for Central Texas Iron Works. Like his brother, he also enjoyed barbecue and had a passion for putting out fires. The family said in a statement, we are comforted they were together in the end. I can't imagine a family losing two brothers.
Me neither.
I can't
even imagine that.
And I'm sure that some of them, after 15 years, yes, firefighting is dangerous, but they had car fires and
how many fires have they
house
gone
structure
to?
Fires and stuff like that. They never would have expected this, you know?
Yeah.
Cyrus Adam Reed was 29 and was sitting in his last session of training to become an EMT when the call came through about the fire. As a member of the Abbott Volunteer Fire Department, he left the classroom to go to the scene. Cyrus was known for his big smile and bigger heart. A tribute posted to his obituary page says, quote, "My time with Cyrus was brief, but I learned many things about him. He loved his family. He loved God. He lived to be a firefighter. He was hilarious and intelligent with a quick wit, and he would do anything to help anyone. I feel lucky to have known him. To his parents, you raised a truly impressive young man who has impacted countless lives with his laughter, love, and bravery. Cyrus, I know you are in heaven with that beautiful smile on your face." And now I need a second. Jerry Dane Chapman was 26. He was a member of the Abbott Volunteer Fire Department and was nearing the end of his EMT training as well. He was known for helping others and discovered a passion for firefighting after kind of bouncing around different jobs. He was also an avid video gamer and liked to stay up to date with technology. And according to his obituary, he was, quote, "always on call, both as a firefighter and a friend."
Oh.
Perry Calvin was 37. He was a self-employed farmer and member of the Merkel Fire Department, and was also attending an EMT class in West Texas. Perry had two children, ages 9 and 2. At that time, he and his wife were expecting another around Thanksgiving that year. He loved spending time with his family, and he enjoyed horseback riding and rodeos. A post on his obituary read in part, quote, "Through his life, we saw joy, firm beliefs, no regret, and no fear. His death mirrored his life. He gave his all to help those far and near. He left a Texas-sized void in our hearts when he exited this life as a hero that day. But if he had to do it all over again, he wouldn't have had it any other way."
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Kevin Sanders was 33, and like many of the other fallen, studying to become an EMT. He was a volunteer of the Bruceville Eddy Fire Department, but had worked with Plainville, Illinois Emergency Management Agency, and assisting with events and traffic control for 5 years before he moved to Texas.
Wow.
So he'd always been around emergencies and, you know, stuff like that.
Well, the photo I see of him right now looks like he has a law enforcement uniform on.
Okay, yeah.
As well.
A tribute on legacy.com says, quote, "Kevin, it was my great privilege to have called you a friend. You were always kind, open-hearted, and willing to forgive. You really touched my life in a very special way. You are, and always will remain, Superman to me."
Oh.
And that was a quote, so I'm assuming that that person called him Superman. Kenneth Lucky Harris, and Lucky was his middle name, L-U-C-K-E-Y, was 52. He was the Dallas fire rescue captain and was off duty when he heard about the fire at the fertilizer plant. Lucky, as he liked to be called, had a wife and two sons. One of them, Judd, age 25, was inspired by his dad and became a firefighter too. After 31 years of firefighting, Lucky had plenty of knowledge to pass on to his son, so he also enjoyed offshore fishing on his boat, which was called Boots Up. I like that. You put your feet up at the end of the day. And he had built the family home himself.
Oh, wow.
One family friend said of him, quote, "Lucky made our husbands better husbands, fathers, friends, and men in general," unquote.
Oh, wow.
His younger son, Jared, was 22 and was in New Mexico when he found out about the fire and the explosion. He jumped in his car to come home and said he was praying the whole way. He stated, quote, "Honestly, I thought that man was too strong to die, really, because he's the best, toughest man I know," unquote. His family all agree, though, that if he had it to do it all over again, he felt like it was his responsibility to protect the young firefighters, the younger ones,
mm-hmm.
So he would have done the same thing. He would have gone anyway, even knowing what was happening. William Buck Uptmore
mm-hmm.
was 45. Along with being a firefighter with Dallas Fire and Rescue, Buck owned a fence building business and was known to be very reliable, He enjoyed fishing, coaching Little League, and assisting his daughter in barrel racing events.
Oh.
Yeah. Buck was a great chef and loved to grill.
Texas.
He also enjoyed the rodeo and had jockeyed racehorses and ridden bulls and bareback and saddled broncos. He was an animal lover and was known to pick up strays, and he was a musician, the drummer for a local band that was formed by his father.
My gosh, what didn't he do?
I know.
He was a renaissance.
So that was all of the firefighters and first responders. There's a little less to find on the civilians.
Right.
Because, you know, of course, the heroes, they always, you know, talk about a lot more and stuff, mm-hmm. but, and those firefighters, by the way, along with being volunteers for, like, West or Abbott or whatever, several of them volunteered with other fire departments, too.
Wow.
So I just named one for each, but several of them did volunteer for, you know, other town fire departments. And I guess that's why they came from those other towns, because they all knew each other. So they, you know, when something happened, because the towns that were close nearby, they came. They showed up, you know.
Yeah.
So Judith Ann Monroe was 65 and lived in the West Terrace Apartments. She was a native of Stinton, Texas, which is in the southern part of the state, and she lived there most of her life, but moved to West in 2001. She had a son and two grandchildren with whom she loved to spend time. She was an avid reader who enjoyed board games and solving word puzzles. Mariano Saldivar was 57 and also lived in the apartments. He was originally from Mexico. He lived in California and worked in the warehouse industry until he retired in 2008, and then decided to move to West to be closer to family. He had three sons and a daughter and was said to be a faithful and loving husband and father. Adolf or Adolf Lander was 96, and he was a resident of West Rest Haven Nursing Home. In his life, he was an avid gardener and carpenter who loved building birdhouses. According to his obituary, he enjoyed dancing and playing dominoes and was the best at making dill pickles. Best of all, he shared anything he canned with his friends and neighbors.
Hey, hey.
He had a daughter, a son, six grandchildren, and 18 great-grandchildren.
Oh, my goodness.
In the online guest book on his obituary, an employee of the nursing home had this to say. Quote, Papa, I'm going to miss your sweet smile saying, hello, honey, greeting me in the dining room as I came into work. You always put a smile on my face. May you rest in peace, Papa Lander. You will always have a place in so many people's hearts and will always be remembered. Unquote. They called him Papa Lander. That's, I can't imagine.
So sweet.
There was no picture of him that I could find. Usually on the obituaries, there was a picture. I didn't see a picture of him, but I was like, I want to see his face.
Yeah.
96. So, that was all of the victims. So, West Texas has been rebuilding, settling lawsuits, trying to get back to a new normal since that night. West Fertilizer Company has not been rebuilt, and I couldn't find a source saying whether or not it was going to be rebuilt. Mm-hmm. The owner of Adair Grain, the farmer that bought it, Donald, I think was his first name,
mm-hmm.
was like 83 when this happened.
Oh, wow.
So I'm guessing if it were to be rebuilt, it would be a different owner.
Mm-hmm.
Since the explosion, there have actually been a couple of other fires in Texas towns that have fertilizer plants. Those fire causes could not be found either.
That's weird.
But with everything they learned from West, the fires didn't lead to an explosion. So a lot of people learned about, you know, storing the fertilizer that was explosive in wooden bins and not having security and, you know. So a lot of lessons were learned. And it's paid off in a way because there were fewer lives lost because of West.
Right. It's just so sad that it's such a horrible accident that has to get.
Yeah, and unfortunately, it's like the cliched saying, history was written in blood.
Mm.
And it is.
Isn't that the truth?
Because people have to die for things to be changed.
Yeah.
So, that is the story of the West Fertilizer Plant fire and explosion from April 17th, 2013.
Oh my gosh.
And that was a tough one to get through.
No kidding.
I had known about the explosion and the fire and everything for a while. And like I said earlier, the pictures are astounding to look at.
Mm-hmm.
The cell phone videos, it's wild. And most of them are the fire, and then when the explosion happens, you know, the cell phones are dropped and different stuff, so a lot of them cut off. But yeah. But reading about all these people was really hard.
It really puts it in perspective, yeah. Because it's not just a big event, it's people's lives.
Right. Exactly.
And
it was these men that were not, they didn't have emergency plans in place. They didn't have training for the chemical fires.
Yeah.
They weren't aware of what was stored there and how volatile it was. So they went thinking, I'm going to fight this fire and then I'm going back to my family.
Wow.
They showed up there and they were just like, they were...
like it was a normal fire.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you know.
It's like, let's go in and find out what this is.
Nothing
and,
out of know. The ordinary yeah. fire.
And if, you know, I've read some of the fires that they found because the ammonium nitrate was stored properly and not in wooden bins.
Mm-hmm.
They just let the fire burn the building down because they couldn't stop it. It would get too hot and the water would evaporate before, you know. So they just let the building burn down.
Oh my
gosh. And there was no explosion because they had stored the ammonium nitrate properly because of West Texas. So
do you think that West knew how to store it properly, or do you think there was that knowledge which wasn't known at the time for that particular...
I think to them it was such a, I don't want to say benign product.
But like an everyday, they're yeah, so used
it
to
was,
it.
It was farmers. Like they were coming to buy it because that's what they used in the, you know, to mix in with fertilizer and other compounds. The chemicals and stuff were there. They had the proper valves and stuff on the chemical tank. And the chemical tanks were huge. They held like 70,000 gallons or something like that.
I can't even imagine that.
Yeah. And luckily those didn't, like they were damaged, but they didn't split open or whatever.
Which is amazing if you think about that, because they were right there.
Yeah. Yeah. And one of them, you could see the damage, the line where the damage was at the top was the line where the ammonium nitrate, or where the dehydrous anhydrous ammonium stopped. It was at the level that. So the pressure inside protected it kind of and kept it, you know. And then the top where there was nothing inside of it was damaged.
I think I see it. I think this is, it's probably that one.
Yeah.
Possibly. I don't know.
So there was a...
oh, no, that's what that is. Anhydrous ammonia pressure. There's a really good photo and it has like labels of different
diagrams,
things.
Yeah, there are several diagrams in the... is that the CSB
that's
report?
The vessels.
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah, it looks like it is. I mean, these giant fire trucks and stuff were shifted like 6 or 7 inches.
That's
just
unreal.
Moved over. I mean, it just, it's insane. And I mean, there was no way that the firefighters could have made it unless they were protected.
Are those school buses right there in this picture?
Probably. Because the high school is like about 1,000 feet from the thing, so... and they probably, I'm guessing the school system, they probably just parked the buses there.
Yeah, because they don't need to have it in like a
yeah. So people probably just parked their cars there when they were driving the buses and then, yeah. And then parked the buses there at the end of the day. I'm not sure, but there was one story in this that I was like, I don't want to cover. I was like, I'm not sure if I want to tell about this, but this story broke my heart. So I'm going to tell it real quick.
Okay.
So during the evacuation of the nursing home, so everything's on fire. It looks like a war zone. Doreen Strickland, the president of the Abbott Volunteer Fire Department, helped an old man from the nursing home into the passenger seat of her fire engine. And in the back were a dozen or so of the other residents.
Aww.
So, he turned to her and in a raspy voice said, "Am I the Grand Marshal?" And it says Doreen looked at him. What else could she say? "You sure are." "And I'm in front of the parade," he said, lost in his delusion. He had Alzheimer's or some kind of dementia. "You're leading the parade," Doreen said gently. And she piloted the engine around smoking boulders of debris. "You're a very special person right now." Turning her head to cry, she rolled down the window for him, and he started waving at Armageddon.
You shut your mouth right this second.
Right? It gave me chills. I was like, he got in a fire engine. Fire engines are always in parades.
Yeah. But you know what? The comfort he had of being in a parade.
I know.
Instead of seeing all the destruction.
Yeah. But I bet that juxtaposition between the destruction and Armageddon that she was seeing around her with this little old man waving
the at a crowd that wasn't view there. Of it,
yeah.
Because he is seeing a crowd.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Okay, so I can't go on anymore. Right. So that's the story. I encourage you to look at the pictures, look at the cell phone videos, and then look up the victims and look at their pictures because they were real people.
Yes.
And a lot of those guys were wearing cowboy hats.
And they were young. They all were of them Texans. Were still young.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Not that if they were old, it would be like, oh, well.
But firefighter was like 50-something, I think.
Yeah, that's just heartbreaking.
Yeah, even off-duty. Like, they were off-duty, or they were in EMT class, or they were...
Yeah.
You know, they drove over, their personal vehicles were destroyed. Like, they, you know...
And then to hear that where people were saved by, you know, being behind that fire truck, or
right.
the lady behind her son's...
Chevy, yeah.
Chevy that was parked in her garage.
Yeah.
Wild
and because it was a
66 thing.
Chevy, it was made steel. Of actual steel. Yeah.
It gives you pause for sure.
It really does. It is heartbreaking.
Thank you for telling us that story.
Of course.
Because I don't remember that ever happening. I don't have a memory of that.
Yeah.
But you know what? That
it
year...
actually happened just a few days after the Boston Marathon bombing.
Oh, so it was completely overshadowed.
It was completely overshadowed because after the Boston bombing... They were hunting for the suspects for two or three days.
Yeah.
And this happened, I think it was either 3 or 4 days after that. So it popped up in the news, but then the Boston Marathon bombing, I mean, there was actually more loss of life in this. But the Boston Marathon bombing, because it was terrorism, was a
right.
national and international story.
Yeah.
So it overshadowed this explosion. That's why nobody remembers it.
Yeah, I don't remember it at all. Yeah. I also had a almost 1-year-old, so.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you were a little
I was sleep deprived, yeah. but yeah, I don't remember that. Obviously, the Boston Marathon bombing, I do remember. Man.
Yeah.
All right, guys.
Okay, well, we will be back soon with some more interesting stuff. I think you have a case for us next time.
I sure do.
And... until then, everybody be safe and build your house away from a fertilizer plant.
And watch for deer.
And watch for deer.